This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
BTR. If you haven't heard of it, you may not be alone. A well-established asset class in the US, build-to-rent is still a relatively new one here in the UK. But what does a build-to-rent apartment look like? What should investors expect from the asset class? And how is the sector navigating current hurdles such as inflation, lower growth, and the rising cost of living? Well, joining me, Frances Watson, Content Manager, is Mike Adafui, Senior Research Manager in Real Assets. Mike, welcome to Belgium Talks.
Thanks, Frances. Thanks for having me on.
No, great to have you on. So what exactly is build to rent, Mike? Paint a picture for us as to what kind of tenants occupy these apartments and what types of facilities are available to them.
So build to rent is an emerging asset class in the sort of wider UK private rental sector. It'd typically be a new build apartment block with 50 plus units in it, and it'd be specifically built as rental accommodation as opposed to a built for sale scheme. And importantly, it's under single ownership and management throughout the entire scheme. So there's one operator that will control it as opposed to multiple buy-to-let landlords in a block of flats. In terms of, like, as you mentioned, it's still a fairly sort of emerging sector and fairly young sector. I like to think of 2013 when the government launched the task force as the kind of step change for UK build for rent in this country. But prior to that, there's been a lot of work done by the real estate sector in trying to kind of reproduce what we see in the US and European markets, where you've got an institutional residential rental asset class. In terms of what the actual apartments are like, it's very amenities heavy. So when we say amenities, that's each of these schemes would typically, as standard, have gyms, a rooftop terrace, some gardens, sort of bookable, sort of large private dining rooms if you have neighbors or guests coming over, resident lounges, and more often now, co-working spaces in within the scheme itself. Importantly as well is the sort of service level offering that comes with the package. Honestly, it's more like living in a hotel than what we currently would see in a normal sort of rental asset. You know, you have a concierge at the front reception, you've got someone who will be picking up your parcels for you. There's 24/7 sort of repair and maintenance people on site to help with any kind of broken issues in your apartment, for instance.
And I was going to say that sounds amazing and a world away from I don't know, like this dates me now, Mike, but I'm thinking of Rigsby and the rising damp program with the dodgy landlord, and I guess all of that is to make sure the tenants are happy, and that's the key, isn't it, to make sure that tenant turnover is low.
Exactly, and I think that's the point in terms of the way we think about sort of private renting in this country. Like you say, a lot of it is kind of coloured by the idea of dodgy landlords who never picks up the phone, never turns up when, you know, your boiler's broken. And what the BTR sector is trying to turn that on its head and say the customer certainly comes first in this perspective, and they deserve a high sort of service offering to be able to, you know, look at a rented sector as a place to live as opposed to just a stopgap, which is what I think we've kind of looked at the rental sector in the past.
Absolutely. So from tenant then to investor, and what are the broad investment characteristics then, would you say, Mike, of the asset class? What can investors look forward to, if you like?
I think the fundamental story is the imbalance between demand and supply in the UK housing market. Frankly, we've not been building enough homes in the UK for several decades, and that sort of contributed to both higher housing prices in terms of people moving into home ownership and also higher rent in the rented sector. And what that means is that you've got quite a strong demand base, strong occupied demand base going forward with limited supply, which we know fundamentally means higher rents going forward. So for investors, it's quite a compelling income story. That strong demand means higher level of occupancy in the sector, which end up meaning quite strong rental growth going forward, which is typically matched inflation or outpaced it through the kind of historical data that we've seen for the sector. In terms of diversification as well. It provides more kind of needed stability compared to some of the more sort of commercial real estate assets, because everyone needs somewhere to live. So essentially, when you think about different economic outcomes in different economic cycles, that stability of people needing a place to live remains.
I'm just going to pick you up on something that you said, though, about rental growth keeping in line with inflation. And obviously, at the moment, I mean, inflation is nowhere near where we would expect it to have been this time last year. I mean, it's way higher, right? So that brings me on to the question of affordability and some of these tenants. I mean, what in the scenario, what happens if they simply can't afford the rent because it is too high? Then, as landlords of these apartments, what do you do then?
I think we've almost had a sort of an issue like that in recent times. So if we kind of just take a step back and look at what happened through the COVID period, that kind of tells you how BTR asset owners and investors kind of deal with this kind of situation. So we had the case where people weren't able to go to work, weren't able to work anymore. So their incomes obviously declined for a certain period. And what a lot of BTR investors and what we certainly did was create hardship processes to allow people to, you know, defer their rent for a little while or work with them to organize how they'd be able to pay for this sort of going forward and get themselves back up to a level as things improve in the economy. In terms of what we're currently seeing now, the rents that we charge in these apartments aren't overly arduous to those tenants, because there's quite a lot of tenant referencing that happens before you move into an apartment. So we stick to the rule of thumb of the rent should be no more than a third of people's income. So when you're in that level, there is still some room for unexpected changes that we've seen in the economy at the moment. And that still gives them some leeway that it's not kind of a strain on your overall income going forward.
So what are occupier rates at the moment, roughly, Mike?
It's quite compelling, really. So what we've seen is a lot of these BTR assets are in city centres. So we've seen quite a resurgence in demand of people returning back to cities after the pandemic. And in most of our schemes now, we're seeing upwards of 97-98% occupancy. I was in our Bristol scheme on Tuesday, and we were there to see, kind of get a tour around the flats. And unfortunately, we couldn't see a show flat because the last one had just been let, which kind of speaks to the level of demand in that city at the moment.
Yeah, and I guess that's still pretty impressive given the fact that times are hard for the majority of the people. So that brings me back to the investor question then, that as an asset class, I know we've spoken about this before, but you maintain that it offers some hedge against inflation, you know, given its supply and demand characteristics. Just talk us through the mechanics of how that happens.
Again, it offers, there's a nuance to that question. So it offers a partial edge to inflation, more so than other sort of asset classes. And that's because when we think about a hedge of income for inflation, it's really a question about pricing power. So to what degree can an asset generate higher rents, which then means higher income, and a level where occupiers are able and also willing to pay those rents? And that's fundamentally being driven by demand and supply fundamentals of the sector, which we've already spoken about and said that's quite favourable for the residential sector. So there's sort of two kinds of inflation that we kind of think about. One is the sort of cost push inflation and demand pull inflation. If you think about demand pull, that's broadly the economy is doing really well, wages are going up, and therefore people can spend more. And what we've seen is that there's quite a strong correlation between wages and rental growth. If people can afford higher rent, they tend to be able to kind of look for better rental accommodation. So rents move in line with the economy in that sense. In terms of the sort of cost push inflation, which is a little bit of what we're seeing in the UK now, you get this situation where you think about the alternatives to rental housing, which again, it's really about home ownership. And in a period where you've got a weakening economy, you generally see home ownership start to reduce a little bit because people find it more difficult to get mortgages, for instance, or they're more they're unlikely to want to make a big ticket item purchase, which buying a home is the largest of all. So they tend to spend a bit longer in the rental sector, which stabilize that demand story for you in there. So on both fronts, we kind of see it being the occupier demand continuing to support income growth for the sector.
But just on the point of mortgage rates, and obviously these guys aren't paying mortgages, but they are paying rent. I mean, are they? Is the rent priced off the mortgage rate? So obviously, if mortgage rates increase, the rents are going to have to increase. Is that right or not?
No. So it's not the same way we look at it. So I think a lot of people kind of, again, goes back to the way we look at UK rental housing, which is you've got a buy-to-let landlord will have a buy-to-let mortgage, and in some sense you're paying this mortgage. So if that increases, you have to pay your rent. That's not the same way we do it in the BTR sector, because the financials don't work in the same way. So what's going on in the mortgage sector doesn't affect our rents. Our rents are priced based on the demand and supply fundamentals in that local area.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know that. Now, lots of things I don't know. But so let's just go on to the environmental side of BTR, because obviously across the whole built environment, you know, ESG is one of the key words, isn't it, about how you're weaving these considerations into your builds. Given energy crisis, the energy shock that we're seeing at the moment, and the fact that these apartments are reliant, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're reliant on renewable energy. How are you shaping those factors into your model?
So I think just two things on that. On the sort of current energy crisis, it's quite interesting that the built-to-rent sector is better placed than the wider residential sector to kind of reduce the impact of that, because fundamentally they're newer builds, so they're built to a higher standard and a more energy efficient buildings than what we have in the wider sort of UK market, which is again still fundamentally around Victorian housing and Georgian housing, which are not the most energy efficient, as anyone who lives in one during the winter will tell you. So it's the built-to-rent sector could kind of protect a little bit from some of that energy cost increases, because you don't need to kind of pay for as much energy as you would in those other housing. In terms of the net zero challenge and meeting the climate challenge, the real estate sector understands that the residential sector has quite a role to play in terms of meeting that. So the sector, residential buildings contribute around 14% of carbon emissions in the UK alone. So not an insignificant amount.
No.
So what we're now doing is thinking about how we bring energy into the building and ensuring that it's renewable energy going forward, and also how we build these schemes. We look at ways to reduce carbon emissions in the construction phase. So looking at sort of low carbon structural components, such as, you know, low carbon concrete, for instance, during the initial design, and ways of carbon offsetting as the schemes are kind of built. There's also an element of working with your occupiers, which doesn't necessarily happen in the same way as some commercial assets, because there is just this close relationship between a residential tenant and the operator themselves. And it's really around that behavioral changes that occupiers need to make themselves. You know, it's all well and good you building an apartment, but if someone has got your heating on all day, that kind of defeats the point. So it's a collaborative relationship between the asset owner and the residential occupier as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. And of course, the greater the collaboration, the more stable the relationship, I guess. So I just want to say, where next for the sector then, Mike? And you've said a lot about the opportunities in the sector, and that all makes sense to me. But I just want to see, are there any risks in your view that we should be aware of from an investor point of view?
Yeah, sure. So I think in terms of risk, the affordability issue is one of those ones that will always fundamentally remain a risk. And we need to be very careful and diligent in the way we price these schemes, which is where there's quite a lot of diligence that goes into it. Because fundamentally, if you price them incorrectly, that's a lower occupier occupancy rate for your scheme and lower income. So being able to understand that local environment and the local demand and supply issues, the demographics of that location and the incomes of the people who live in those locations remain fundamentally key. In terms of where next for the sector, I think at the moment, build-to-rent is skewed mainly major city centres, and that ends up meaning that you need more urban apartments in large schemes. Where next will be looking at suburban build-to-rent, which is more family housing orientated, and we're starting to see that come through in the sector. It's still a very small part of the sector, makes up about 10% of the sector in terms of family housing, as opposed to apartment blocks. But that's really the way I see it going forward. You know, young people would want to live in an apartment block in the city centre, but as they move on, they have a family, have kids, that might not necessarily work for their lifestyle, and a family housing setting would make more sense. And I see the sector moving to sort of accommodate that going forward.
Okay. So more like the US model, I guess, then, because they're doing houses as well as apartments, aren't they?
Exactly. You know, they're several decades ahead of us in terms of where the sector is, and they're looking at family housing. The European sort of investors also in their markets look at family housing. And I think the demographic changes that we're seeing would also push you to look at family housing as we go forward.
Now, on a personal note then, so if you had a dream build-to-rent apartment, or indeed a dream build-to-rent house, Mike, what would it look like?
Good question. I think as a sector as a whole, we're doing quite a lot of the stuff that I would like to see already. So there's a cluster of assets around sort of the East London, North London, around the Walthamstow wetlands. And I personally just like the idea of these big sort of urban schemes surrounded by a lot of sort of green spaces. And the idea that one of the amenities could actually be something like allotments on the rooftop terrace, you know, get that pure sunlight without any buildings getting in the way. And someone would like to grow quite a lot. That's incredibly appealing for me. And it feels like, you know, quite a communal aspect, which is one of the things that we do try to foster in the scheme. So yeah, something in a green space with available allotments for people would be wonderful.
That does sound great, and great for well-being as well. That's the thing, to just get out and just look at, as you say, in the greenery and the tranquility of it all. Well, thanks so much for talking to us on BTR, Mike. I certainly learned a lot. Hope listeners have too. And thanks again for your time. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording, and do not reflect the views of Legal and General Investment Management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions, and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, elgim.com.
Copyright 2021, Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.